This is Graham Atwell welcoming you to Sounds of the Bazaar, live internet radio, live from the European Conference on Educational Research in beautiful Helsinki. It's a beautiful building we're in here. It's a very large, old university right on the Senate Square. In fact, from one side of the square, we can look out and we can see the Prime Minister's office straight opposite it. And we'll be broadcasting three programmes from ECR this week. This is the first of the programmes at 1 o'clock, going out till we're broadcasting today till 13:30 on Helsinki time. Of course, it will be different times for those of you in other parts of the world. And we'll be broadcasting at the same time tomorrow. And then on Friday, we'll be just half an hour earlier. And we'll be bringing you interviews with some of the people who make this conference. I should explain, it's a huge conference. There's something like 2,000 delegates here. And it's organised through a whole series of networks, 25, 27 networks, I think, who organise the activities for those networks. And we'll be talking to some of the people who are organising the conference. We'll be talking to some of the delegates at the conference about what themes, what ideas they've got, bringing you the best of the conference. We've got our usual crew here today. We've got the Sounds of the Bazaar summer crew. We've got Dirk in his customary spot behind the mixing deck. And we're delighted to have Maria back again, interviewing and helping host this show. Anyway, we're going to go into a musical break now, and when we come back, Maria will be talking to the last year's winner of the Best Paper Award at ECER. Over to you, Doug.
Nadie como tú, baila lo alo, nadie como tú. Baila el boalo, nadie como tú. Baila el boalo, nadie como tú. Baila el boalo. Nadie como tú. Baila el boalo, nadie como tú. Baila el boalo, nadie como tú. Baila el boalo, nadie como tú. Boalo. Tú ven a bailar lembo.
Hello. Well, welcome here. We have Costanza Sproret, a student from University of Strathclyde in Glasgow that was awarded the ESSER 2000 Best Paper Award. Welcome.
Thank you.
So before I start asking you about the paper and this experience, I would like to tell me how was your experience last year as a PhD student and your first experience in ESSER.
Yeah, last year in Vienna, it was the first international conference I went to, so I didn't really know what to expect. I had a really great time there. It was very exciting to meet all these people from different European countries, to have the exchange, and I especially valued the friendly and very supportive atmosphere there.
So your expectations were fulfilled?
Yes, completely so. I definitely wanted to come back to Helsinki this year.
Great. So how do you feel this year with this best award, best paper award? Can you please tell us some things about your paper?
Yes. Yes, first of all, I was very happy to receive this award. It's a great honor and I think great opportunity to make my work more public to a wider audience. And my paper looks at policy debates in the UK around the idea of young people's aspirations, their aspirations in education and beyond. And I wanted to see why there's so much talk about aspiration over the last few years, and also if this resonates some wider European debates.
So, as a PhD student, I have also aspirations for the educational system in my country. So I would like to give me your perspective, students. What the students really have in mind for the future of education? What did you find out? What probably you guess for the future? What do you think that they expect for a good educational system?
Well, my paper was looking at the policy debates, so I didn't ask students directly, but I wanted to find out how these debates construct young people, and I've found that they that the debate is quite individualizing, so the responsibility is very much placed on the individual to succeed in education and to participate in the labor market. And I think I argue that we should also look more at the structural conditions and the structure of the labor market, and emphasize this more in the debate.
I'm asking you because I believe that the best thing for a student, it's first of all to be motivated. But motivated is something that comes from inside. It's when you love to learn, you just try to find ways to make this possible. And if an educational system can really help you and support in this, it's very nice. And this now we live in this 21st century, you know, with all this media and everything, we have this feeling of lifelong learning, and people try to find other ways too. So if educational system can open a little bit and be more supportive, and the students can understand that it's not about certification, but it's about learning, and learning never stops. And learning is everywhere. It's in the school, and it's out of the school, with friends, here, everywhere we can learn. So that was the idea of my question, if something came up for this, an aspiration for an open educational system.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think it should be the aim of every educational system to encourage young people to realize what they want to do, and also to value all the different paths that they take, and also to open opportunities for everyone to do what they want, if they want to go to higher education or if they choose other pathways.
So for the future, next year we will have ESSER 2011. Will you be here again?
Yes, of course, if I can. I would love to come to Berlin.
Okay, thank you very much, and congratulations, really congratulations for your paper.
This is Graham Atwell. You're listening to Sounds of the Bazaar Live Internet Radio, live from the European Conference on Educational Research in Helsinki. Now, one of the things that always puzzles me about these conferences held annually is just how you organise them. I've had some experience of conference organising. We did the PLE conference, which has had some radio broadcasts from. You might remember from Barcelona earlier this summer. And we had about 120 people at that conference. And boy, was it a lot of work. We were totally exhausted after organizing that. Now, that's 120 people, but it's not 120 people here. It's something like 2,000. So how do you organize a conference with 2,000 people? Now, I've got someone here to tell me. It's Gunilla Holm, who is chair of the local Helsinki organizing committee. Can you tell me something what you have to do to organize a conference like this? What have you been doing over the period building up to this conference?
Well, first of all, we started about 1.5 years ago with planning the theme of the conference. And then we moved on to starting looking for keynote speakers. And also about a year ago, we already made the arrangements for all the rooms. We pretty much now have reserved all the rooms here on the city campus. We are in 4 buildings, and these are huge buildings. And then we have had someone full-time employed since January to coordinate all this work, because there are a lot of small details that you have to work on also, such as you have to decide on the logos, you have to get bids for bags, for name tags.
And it's those little things that take a lot of time.
Yeah, it takes a lot of time, and there are a tremendous amount of details to pay attention to. Right now we have about 10 people who are employed to work on this for the last few weeks. And then we have about 80 volunteers. And then
80 volunteers? 80 volunteers. So where are you getting all these volunteers from?
Well, they're all students, so they get something for this. They get some credit, student credit, because they get to listen to the speeches at the same time while they're volunteering. And then they, as a reward, they also get a trip to Tallinn on Saturday after the conference.
Oh, I think they deserve that by the time they've done all that. And what made you want to be head of the organising committee? It sounds a fairly thankless job. How did they get you to volunteer for that?
Well, I'm not so sure I really volunteered.
You were volunteered.
Yeah, I were volunteered, right. The thing is that, someone else was going to organize this conference, and it didn't work out. And then the University of Helsinki or the Department of Education volunteered to do this. And then it just so happened that I ended up chairing the committee.
I was going to ask you, sort of on that, what's your day job when you're not organizing massive conferences?
Well, I'm a professor of education. My main area is really sociology of education and multicultural education. So that's part of the reason why the theme is cultural change in education.
But that's an interesting one, isn't it? They talk about competence-based education these days. What's in the competence of being a professor in education for organizing this sort of conference?
Well, I guess you could say that I'm completely incompetent, but you know, you develop competences. I think we have all grown a lot. You see that with the coordinator and even the volunteers. I mean, they are growing all the time. I mean, they're developing the skills.
And I must say, because we've had to use a lot of technical help here, turning up, because we didn't know the layout, we didn't know the rooms and everything. We needed bits of cables, and the cooperation from the technical support here has been absolutely incredible, probably the best I've ever had. And I think other people are saying that. It really is. The support mechanisms are wonderful here. So you obviously got some competencies from somewhere.
Yeah. And I think we are kind of learning. It's really like learning by doing, really.
Can I ask you one last question, which I promise I won't tell the ear of people what you say. Would you do it again?
Probably. You mentioned one, that you did it for 120 people. I don't think it makes a difference if you do it for 1,000 or 2,000. So now we have what you call the competences, so now we could do it again.
Well, ECR, listen to that. It could be Helsinki again. Thank you very much, and thank you for all the work you've done in organising the conference and making it a really wonderful experience.
Thank you.
Okay, Dirk, over to you.
Thank you.
And I hope you enjoyed that musical break. I hope you're enjoying this program, Sounds of the Bazaar, live from the European Conference on Educational Research 2010, live in Helsinki. Just a quick plug, actually, before we go to our next interview. We are streaming all the keynotes from the conference. There's two going out, I think, at 6:30 this evening. That's 18:30 Helsinki time. So for those of you who know someone as Dirk's... Can someone find the times for me? Anyway, we've got two going out this evening, and before we finish this programme, we'll get you the right times for those. And we've got two more going on Friday. What was that, Joe? 5:45. That's local time. So that's 4:45 in Central Europe. And... 3:45 if you're in the UK. It's very confusing. This is a conference on culture, and there's an aspect of culture. Dirk's just come and given me the program, says I've got all the time. Anyway, I'm delighted here. We've got Palle Rasmussen here to talk to. He's the convener of one of the networks which make ECER work. And your network is?
It's Network 23, Politics and Policy of Education.
So what is policy and the politics of education?
Well, it's generally concerned about how education policy is organized and pursued in different European countries. And when we say policy, we often mean sort of the more practical, instrumental way of organizing institutions, programs, things like that. While politics is a broader thing involving political ideologies, general concepts of knowledge and things like that.
So, I guess you've got an interchange between those, haven't you? So you've got different political concepts, and obviously governments have different aspirations in different countries. Yeah. And I guess that affects the way they try and organise education?
It does, yes. I mean, we've just had the first two rounds of sessions here. One of the papers I attended was about comparing educational inspection in Scotland and France. And then it's very clear that these are two different societies with different ideas about the role of the state in education, and that this has an effect on the way they organize their inspectorate, and also on the perceptions of the political actors in this.
And it's a hard job understanding what you don't know in some ways, because if you're in a culture, I can remember once I was in Spain, and talking to a head teacher, I can't remember, we said something, we were talking about how very open it seemed in his school, and he said, well, if I wasn't open, I wouldn't get elected. And the people from Wales I was at nearly fell off their chairs. What, you mean it's elected? But then he said, well, of course, how is it done in Wales? And we said, they're appointed. And he said, that would be totally impossible, I'd have no credibility if I was appointed. So it's that difficulty in knowing what you don't know.
True, and I mean, that's one of the very good things about having European conferences, that these different systems and cultures, they get confronted, we get to know a little bit more about how each other's systems work and get wiser.
I'm interested, what do you see as the major aim of your network? What do you want to achieve with this research? Or obviously different researchers will have different personal agendas, but where do you see as a network, what would you like to achieve?
The network tries to present research in these areas done from the different European countries. I think we don't have sort of a political goal in that way, but if I should say something, I would say that achieving, when I say get wiser, I mean also that you get to know more about what instruments, what policy instruments are good for the political goals. For instance, what are good for equality? What policy instruments are good for spreading knowledge among the population? So if we can build sort of a broader, more multicultural understanding of these things, that would be a good resource.
So you get boring. That's one issue. Given that these things are so situated in cultures and political cultures of different countries, how much room is there to borrow and adapt from each other in Europe? or how much are you really set in?
But there's a lot of room, and there's a lot of borrowing and adapting going on, but it's at different levels. I mean, the European Union, the European Commission, the OECD, many of these actors, they do this borrowing, what they call policy learning, right? But they do it in many ways in a top-down way. So what we could hope to contribute from conferences with this was very much more, how is it seen from the actors actually involved in education? Not from the administrators, not from the politicians, but from the educationalists in different positions.
And so if you can take that bottom up, that viewing, then probably what you see from the bottom is very different to what often is intended from above.
It is. I mean, for instance, you get these buzzwords, evidence-based policy, things like that. And they tend to be taken over through the international collaboration by national governments and sold to their populations. And in reality, they reflect a very different view of processes than the one you get when you move out into the different countries and their cultures. So in that way, yes. I should add one thing, is that, I mean, this is a European conference, but it's not all parts of Europe are equally represented. I mean, the East and the South tend to be underrepresented, at least in this network, also in others. So it would be very good, I mean, to have more of these countries included to get a broader view of these things.
Yes, because there is a different perspective, certainly from my experience in East Europe. But then in East Europe, they're very policy-driven in attempts to just... Can I ask you a personal question then? You're an expert in policy and education. And presumably, like most people at this conference, you're interested in improving education. What policies would you introduce to improve education in Europe? I'm sorry for asking you a hard one.
That is a very complex question, I would say. I would introduce a lifelong learning policy, which was a real lifelong learning policy. I mean, the European Union pursues a lifelong learning policy, and it's a good thing.
It aspires to.
But it does. I mean, and one must recognize it's a good thing. They've tried to link, because primary schooling, adult education, higher education tend to be split up in very different communities. And trying to link these, trying to get a more coherent practice of education policy is a good thing. Only the problem is that the European Union does this in a very formal, very administrative way. So I would like to have created a more real lifelong.
And how can we do that?
We can do that by allowing fora, allowing communities that link the practitioners from these different sectors of education much more together, both in national context but also in transnational communities.
So it's really breaking down those sectoral divides which we have.
That's at least a major issue.
And getting a discussion.
There are more issues, but you asked me a very big question.
No, I asked you for one. Well, thank you very much. I mean, I've learned something from this.
Okay.
And if people want to find out more about your network, how can they do that?
Well, they can attend the sessions. They can also look at the ERA website, where are descriptions of all the network, and there are contact persons there, so they can always contact.
And thank you for that. And that's the same for all the networks. If you want to find out more about what the European Educational Research Association does and about those different networks, just go to the ERA website, which is www.eera.net, I think. I'm looking over at my supportive people over there. It's DOS. So it's eera, eera.net. ecer.eu.net, and if you just go there, I'm going to print this up on the website if you're going confused by me, because I confused myself totally there, you can find out about all those networks. Thank you very much for coming on the radio today. I enjoyed that greatly, and we're going to a musical break now.
24 heures du Mans, la plus grande course automobile d'endurance du monde. Verrons-nous cette année les 200 km/h de moyenne. Deux marques sont en lice. Ferrari, le champion inamovible. Ford, le géant américain qui va tenter de s'imposer à ses dernières. La première séance d'essai a été contrariée par une violente tempête. Mais le vendredi soir, le vent s'était calmé et cela a permis de battre un sensationnel record du tour.
Sounds of the bazaar, the sounds of the summer, the sounds of Helsinki, the sound of the rain beating on the window. We're in beautiful, rainy, actually the sun's come out now, Helsinki for the European Conference on Educational Research. We're broadcasting live internet radio to you, the first of three programmes you've just been listening to today. We will be back with more interviews, more news, more ideas tomorrow at the same time, 1300 local time, 1200 CET, 11 o'clock UK time, and half an hour earlier on Friday. We hope you enjoyed the show. We've certainly enjoyed producing it. Thanks, as always, go to all the people in the crew here, Joe and Dirk, and thanks very much to Maria, who's been doing some of the interviewing today. And a big thanks to Mikkel, who's just come into the room. Mikkel has been wonderful. He's been giving us all the support to access to all the networks, finding us cables when we don't have it, helping us work the machines, helping us when everything crashes. And can't thank Mikkel too much for that. And thank you all to you, the listeners. We hope you've enjoyed the show today. And we'll be talking to you again tomorrow. You have been listening to Sounds of the Bazaar, live from Helsinki. Sounds of the Bazaar is a Pontedusky production for the European Conference on Educational Research. Sounds of the Bazaar is licensed under a Creative Commons 3 license.